Ooh, spooky season is upon us. We're gonna talk about movies.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Welcome to Pop and Circumstance, the podcast where two broke women of color talk about things that make us happy in scary times. But what we're talking about today doesn't really give me a lot of happiness because I'm just not a big fan. I don't like to be scared.
She hates horror movies.
I do, and we're going to talk about horror movies today.
Yes, we're going to talk about the history of horror movies, mm-hmm. and because Eva doesn't care for horror movies, our producer, because now she's not just a guest producer, she's fully accepted the role.
Yeah.
Victoria is now going to be like my co-host today.
Yeah.
And she's going to help me go through the history of horror. So.
And I appreciate what horror does, and I can acknowledge a good horror movie. There are a couple that I do like, and I will be putting in to this episode, but because I don't really like horror movies, I will be probably abstaining from opinions for a lot of this stuff.
It's fine, Eva. I just don't like fun.
I just like to sleep, but I don't want to be scared all the time.
See, you know what? As a kid, I didn't like horror movies, or I was really scared of them, but you just put on a nice movie or a nice TV show afterwards, and then you're fine, and then you don't have to worry about it. Like, I would put a Disney movie on afterwards, and then I'm like, look, see, it's not real. Everything's fine.
I do stay scared like 3 days after that. I like horror movies, so I'm willing.
It's the thrill. It's the thrill.
Did we say who we are? I'm Eva.
Oh, yeah. Whoops.
Oh, yeah. I'm Eva.
I'm Emily.
I'm Victoria.
Yeah.
I would think, you know, 7 episodes in. Well, you might. This might be your first episode.
Maybe this might be your first. If this is your first episode, welcome.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us on our spooky adventure.
Yes.
This is going to be a month-long thing. Mm-hmm. Each week is going to be a different spooky
thing.
Yeah.
We're going to, I think next week we're going to talk about television, like spooky things in television. And then the week after that, we're going to talk about books and literature and, you know, that kind of stuff. So knowing that, we're not going to talk about a lot of Stephen King because he's more of literature. And we're not going to talk about your favorites like Haunting of Hill House, Twilight Zone, whatever.
Yeah.
Those will be saved.
Later. Mm-hmm. Not right now. Right now we're focusing on the horror movies.
Yes.
And then the history of the horror movies.
Yeah.
Not our personal opinions just yet.
It'll probably be in the later thing. Yes. And then maybe sprinkle in some opinions throughout. Emily, tell us where this all started.
Yeah, we're going to start it off with, you can't talk about horror movies without talking about the ones who kind of started it all. We'll talk about the Universal Classic Monsters. They really made their studios with monster movies. They became the studio that they are with them. Their first big one that became the classic Universal Monster is The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Yes, I said The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. Not the Disney one, obviously. Mm-hmm. Quasimodo is a book. So it's the same story, but it's a horror movie because it's more gothic and everything.
It's your classic ugly monstrosity falls in love with a gorgeous woman kind of trope, I guess you could say.
What's really cool is that the actor Lon Chaney, I want to say this is his last name. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
I think most people say Chaney.
Chaney.
There we go. I was like, see?
This is why we have Victoria here.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Chaney. Yeah, Dick Chaney.
There we go. I was like, he applied his own makeup. So if you ever watched that movie, also he did this with The Phantom of the Opera because he played both.
Huh.
If you think the makeup design and everything's great, he did it himself. So kudos to you, my dude.
Nice.
So that really started the big craze with monster movies. Mm-hmm. Although Universal did have two before in 1913 and 1914, the actual Universal Classic Monsters didn't start until the 1923. And also what's really cool is that this is the first time that a franchise, I would say, has ever happened. One, domestically and internationally. Okay. So Universal really did push the game as a very small studio because they were still a baby. They had just started.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos to them. As I mentioned, there's Phantom of the Opera. Then there's more like your Dracula.
Dracula. A 1, a 2, a 3. No, not that one. No.
I'm gonna kill her.
Nosferatu, is that... Is that different from Dracula? Is that not? Oh, that's German, isn't it? I think we watched I think there was a Wisecrack video we watched. I think Nosferatu is a German movie. Never mind.
Yeah. Dracula, like their Bela Lugosi? Lugosi?
Yes. We were getting the nod of approval from Victoria.
Yeah, I was like, me pronouncing last names, I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher them. I read them how they're spelt. And, you know, some people are not American, so.
Yeah.
Also, the American language is also very hard for me to...
It's not
Spanish perfect. Was first.
Yeah.
So I read as it's pronounced, as it's spelled. Anywho, he is the star of Dracula. And then that really, like, they're like, oh my God, Dracula. His accent, everything. Oh.
Yeah, everything.
Because they, at the same time as they were making the American version of Dracula, they were also making a Spanish version of Dracula. Mm. So the American one was made during the day, and then a Spanish one was made at night, at the same time. But they really like the Spanish one too. They're like, oh, the acting's great, but they're missing Lugosi. They're like, they're missing that great piece of acting that he was giving. And it's partly, I believe, is because of his accent.
Okay.
But I haven't seen Dracula, so I can't tell you. And then we have Frankenstein. That was their next big movie, which also helped Universal really survive the Great Depression. I think they would have probably had to kick the bucket, and as everybody, you know, had to scramble to figure out how they were going to survive during that time period as a studio. And Lugosi was supposed to play Frankenstein. Then he found out that he was going to have to wear prosthetics the whole time and that you wouldn't see his face. And he was like, F that, bro. So
he's then, like, you're going to cover this beautiful mug? Excuse
yeah, literally. And then so he gave, so the role went to this kind of, this guy who's only ever played supporting roles. His name is, I don't know how to pronounce his. See, everybody had names that I can't pronounce. Karloff?
Oh, yeah. Boris?
Yes, Boris Karloff.
Karloff. Again, Victoria's here. Victoria,
this is why she's better at this than me.
Well, and then also she has this vast knowledge of the golden age of cinema.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also why we brought her in specifically for this episode.
We played, this is a little bit off topic.
Yeah.
Like, not Disney Scene It. Oh. But a Scene It, a movie Scene It, and she knew all of the classic movies.
Classic movies. So she will be our...
You asked me, like, actors now, I can do that, no problem. Actors back then, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But he did Frankenstein because he was like, I have no problem doing this shit. And he became a very big horror actor from that. And then that spawned several other movies, The Mummy, and then you've got a shit ton of Universal classic monster movies. You've got, Jesus, I was going to say Creatures from the Underworld. That's not it.
Nope.
You have The Invisible Man.
Creature from the Black Lagoon. Is that
there,
one of them?
There we go. That that's is. The one I'm, yes, that's exactly the one I was thinking of. It's like, why? Creatures from the Black Lagoon, which is basically Shape of Water.
I mean, I was about to say, I saw him, I was like, this is exactly the Shape of Water guy.
Yeah, because he falls in love with the woman scientist, which is literally the ship.
Oh, wait. Was she a scientist?
No, she was a cleaner.
Oh, okay. More humble, but...
But same thing applies.
Yeah.
He falls in love with a woman.
Monster.
The Wolfman. Yeah. There's a Bride of Frankenstein. There was just a lot of movies that Universal made that brought horror into the limelight. And there have been so many remakes and so many directors, writers, and everything have been inspired by what has been done before. Like Ian McKellen has gotten an Oscar nomination by one of the directors from the director who did Frankenstein. They made a book about him called The Father of Frankenstein. And they then adapted that into the movie Gods of Monsters. And then that gave Sir Ian McKellen a Oscar nomination. So like these things are very deep and like
deeply embedded in,
embedded, there we go, that was what I was looking for. I was like, ugh! Embedded into our zeitgeist. Like this is part of our culture, whether you like horror movies or not. You know who Frankenstein is.
Yeah.
And every Frankenstein movie has the lightning strike, even though that's not in the book.
Yeah,
although we're not talking about literature, like that's nowhere near in Mary Shelley's...
The iconic shot of lightning striking, you know, then, the machine.
He's alive!
Yeah, that's, and then the spinning, you know, the pinwheel thingy. and
there's all these little things that, like, that you always look back at that you got from these horror movies. So, like, it's very relevant and very, that you owe to horror movies.
Yeah.
So, that's what you get from the Universal
Monsters.
Classic Monsters. You can always look, they sell, like, the set boxes. Not of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a shit ton more.
Yeah.
They have a lot of monsters. A lot.
Which you can see at any future of a Universal Horror Nights. Not this year because there's a pandemic. But maybe in the future.
Yeah, they usually do a house for the classic monsters. And then they've done remakes. As you've probably seen, they tried to do the Dark Universe again.
Mm.
And then it flopped because, sorry, Tom Cruise, you just couldn't do what the mummy did in the 1990s. Brendan Fraser is an angel and we owe him the world.
Yes.
Same with Rachel Weisz.
Mm-hmm.
We'll stand by that statement.
Yeah.
That's it on the Universal monster movies.
And then they kind of went out of fashion. They weren't making any money. And you'll see this as a common thread throughout the whole history about what is making money. And it's usually things that are new and fresh. They kind of beat it to death.
Yeah.
Until someone makes something new. And then that someone is...
Alfred Hitchcock. So, separately from, like, what Emily was talking about, whereas hers was more monster, or not more, it was, like, just monsters, Alfred Hitchcock kind of goes straight into, like, humans... as being, you know, what you should be afraid of. So Alfred Hitchcock started making movies early 1930s, but it's in England, Britain, whatever. So it's, like, not popular here.
Does not count.
And then, I think his most popular one is called The 39th Step, which is actually pretty, like, well-known, but I've never seen it. But then he starts at... here in America in the 1940s, starting with Rebecca. So this one is like, it's not his own concept, so to speak. It's more of a book that he, like, bases it off of. But this is, like, where you can start to see, like, his signature style kind of develop. And it's, like, the same as any of his other movies. It's dark. There's a lot of suspicious activity. There's a little bit of murder.
So with this movie, it's basically the, like, I'm just going to give you a quick summary of it. It's this lady. She's, like, a young blonde woman, obviously.
Hitchcock loves his blondes.
And she marries this, like, mysterious, brooding man who has a dead wife. And so she goes to, like, live in this big, creepy house. And then she just is, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. But it's not like, when you see it, you wouldn't immediately think Alfred Hitchcock, because it is his first movie, and he's, like, barely developing his style in that. And so he makes a lot of similar movies in that, like, vein. They always have women, they always have like, suspicious handsome men, and murder, obviously.
Does he not trust men?
I don't know. I did notice that he always gets, like, really good looking, like, handsome men that you would trust.
Yeah.
Right? And then, like, slowly over the course of his movies, he's like, but look at this.
Yeah.
And it's, like, a bunch of shady stuff.
I wonder if that's him just hating, like, hot men, because he himself is not a hot man.
That's what I was going to say.
Or is he actually being, like, critical of how society views handsome men? You know, like...
He knew about serial killers before serial killers
was a huge thing. Yeah, so, like, before Ted Bundy was a twinkle in his mother's eye. Like, you know, I wonder.
Wait, continue.
And I mean, I just, if you ever want to watch these, like, movies, I would recommend, like, watching Suspicion, Notorious, Shadow of a Doubt. These are, like, really, really good movies.
Mm.
Shadow of a Doubt is his personal favorite, and I personally enjoy these ones as opposed to, like, his more iconic movies, but that's just my opinion. So then in the 1950s, this is, like, when he really starts to develop his Hitchcockian style. So, like, a lot of camera movements. He makes the audience seem like the like, voyeur.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of the camera movements would be, like, following, like, a person's gaze, so to speak.
Okay.
And then he also does a lot of, like, the way he frames His shots are done in a way to make it like filled with as much anxiety and like fear as possible, okay. right? So that you get like scared when there's yeah. nothing scary going on. So it just builds that like feeling of like anxiousness.
Could yeah. an example be the ending shot of Psycho where, what's his name again? Bates, Norman Bates is like just looking up at the camera. Does that count? Like literally he's just sitting in a room, but he's looking up at the camera and smiling. That gives me chills. I was literally actually so scared. I was like, this is a scary man. And throughout the movie, I just thought he was, again, a handsome,
yeah, relatively, guy. Like, he doesn't look harm... He looks harmless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then at the end, he looks so terrifying. That's...
Yeah. So, like, that. And then he mixes it with, you know, like, music. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, especially the Psycho... Mm-hmm. I don't know. Soundtrack, yeah, is, like, so iconic. Yeah, so, like, all of those together, it makes a certain kind of style that, like, he just, you know, has. And I'm sure, like, if you look at his movies, like, you'll be able to, like, really recognize what it is. Mm-hmm. But I feel like in the 50s, so it's not, like, he hasn't yet done Psycho or The Birds, which is, like, his most famous movies. These ones are like a little bit more fun and I enjoy watching those a lot. So like Dial M for Murder, Rear Window, Vertigo, which we watched.
I do like Vertigo.
Yeah.
That one was interesting. That one seemed really like artsy almost. Like that one, what you would expect from what was it made in the 50s? 60s? Yeah, 50s. 50s? What you would expect from a 50s movie, especially like, I don't know, that one seemed kind of out of the box for me of what I envision a Hitchcock movie to be. Just because that one scene where he's having his delusions, I don't know how else to describe it. That one did make me feel a little bit uneasy. That was kind of, it was interesting for sure. I did like it though.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, I feel a lot of people think about Alfred Hitchcock and they think like immediately, and with good reason, like Psycho, mm-hmm. The Birds, but they like don't really watch the ones that come beforehand, mm-hmm. right? So it's like he does grow a lot in like the way his movies are made. But I just think the 1950s ones are fun. And exciting, so I think you should watch those. And then also here is, like, where he really develops the Hitchcock blonde.
Mm. Yes.
Because yeah. it's color now.
Yeah. yeah.
So he can really, like, show you the blonde.
Yeah.
So that's, like, where that comes from. And then he just, like, really takes that one and flies with it. especially in Psycho, even though that is a black and white movie, you can look at Janet Leigh and
yeah.
see that. Clearly, she's blonde. So, yeah, into the 1960s, that's where he makes his most popular, Psycho, The Birds. Mm-hmm. I mean, Psycho is great for good reason. Like, yeah, it's...
He coined the Scream Queen. The first... Pretty much the first Scream Queen. What's her name again?
Janet Leigh.
Janet Leigh.
Yeah. You were about to call her Jamie
Lee. I was about to call her Jamie Leigh. I was like, no, we'll
I get knew
to
it. I knew it, too.
We'll get to her in my section, but yeah. So...
Yeah, and then so, like, that one's, like, super iconic. Good for her. But I feel like also Psycho is the one movie where he... Because I feel in all of his movies, he has women mostly at the forefront of it. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. And that one, he kind of cuts out the woman very early on. Mm-hmm. Well, like, the woman that you think is going to yeah. be the main character. Right. And then, you know, kind of adds on another one. But it's mostly, like, a story about Norman Bates as opposed True. To in the other, like, his earlier films. It's about, like, a woman figuring out whatever needs figuring out in that movie. And then just separately, like, this man was not good with actors. Like, he... pulled really great performances out of people, but he was like
he was a dick.
Terrible. Yeah. Especially to women. I mean, I feel like it's really well known that he like practically tortured the lady from The Birds whose name I oh, can't think
no,
of right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I remember this. Oh, what's her name? I don't remember her name, but I have heard of this story where like
Tippi Hedren.
What
That's
did
what it
do
is.
To her? Oh my god, he did really like horrible things to actually get like genuine terror out of her. So he could be like, perfect, looks great, cut, print, let's go. And I'm just, yeah.
Some directors just suck, man.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, he was like kind of a dick, but he made really good influential movies. And then also just like separately, because we are women. Like I was saying, he does always feature women, which is like you would think is a good thing, right? But he always, always in the films, like makes them suffer. Like yeah. they have to... you know, go through a lot in the movies, which is not the greatest,
no.
but it does make for compelling stories sometimes. And that's him. I mean, he did a lot, obviously. And from there on, like there was no, you don't see any gore in his movies. His are very like stylized. I wouldn't say like, I mean, back in the day, it is a horror movie, but now you would consider it more of like a thriller.
Yeah.
I would say Psycho maybe is the one you would consider more of a horror film.
Yeah.
Out of all his other ones. Mm-hmm. And it is, I think, in the Psycho, in that's like one of the first times you really see like a bloody scene, right? Yeah. When Norman Bates kills.
Or like even like nudity, because there's like the Hays Code going around this time, or was it later?
No, it's this time.
But yeah, so like he got away with a lot.
Yeah, and it's always because it's like his very like, it's classy, but not really. I mean, and then definitely, like, I imagine you're going to talk about, like, directly after his era of horror movies, if you will, it gets a lot more intense and, like, the gore and stuff from here on out.
Yeah, during that time period, specifically any sort of horror movie was very light on their gore or light on the blood. Because even, like, old school, like the monster movies too, were very light on the gore. Like, yes, there were some gruesome stuff. Because even they say like Frankenstein was gruesome and things like that. But like, they're not, their level of gruesome is very different than what we see now. It's chocolate sauce that they eat. Like, it's not.
They could get away with. They're more like kind of. I don't know. I could play the devil's advocate and say that the Hays Code like really forced these movie makers to be creative. I think a lot of these constructs, and I'll kind of go into like a little bit on when it comes later, when it comes to like budget or what have you, and that really forced a lot of these iconic movie makers to create iconic horror films, because I think horror movies is the perfect realm to experiment with.
100%
with anything, really. Yeah. I may not like horror movies, but I will give them all my respect in terms of like really pushing boundaries within the film industry.
They're very smart with what they do, because like some of them know, which is like what we'll get into, like Blumhouse, they have truly revived the horror genre for this generation.
Yeah,
because they're like, you know how you make horror low budget, you get excellent return, because if you give them a small amount of money, they will use that small amount of money and make what they can with that. Because if you give, as we've seen, let's use a Marvel movie. You give them a shit ton of money, they're going to make these huge, extravagant things. Yes, a Marvel movie's going to make a lot of money, but let's use Mulan. Mulan had a ginormous budget, made very little money. But if you have like a Blumhouse production, which gives you very little money, all right, fine. I'm going to use that very little money and I will make a movie that I think is really, really good. And now I'm getting a shit ton of money back because people think the movie's good.
Because it's creative. They were forced to be creative.
Yeah.
So. Which you will see as in my portion of this, you'll see that as like a common thread of new invigorating, like, you know, you're injecting more life into the horror genre.
Do you want to get into the, what is the...
The Hays Code?
Hays Code. There.
Yeah, so essentially the Hays Code... the Hays Code, I'm not going to pull up, like, exactly what it says.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into, like, nitty-gritty details, but essentially what it is that it was deeply rooted in the Roman Catholic ideologies of morals. And I'm not... It was a strange time. I think it started around the 30s, 20s, right? And it started around the 30s/20s, and that was like around, you know, World War I, World War II. A lot of people are kind of, America's trying to find themselves, and they're seeing a lot of horrible things in the world, and they're trying to make them seem, you know, above all these horrible things you're seeing in real life. So when you go, and so the Hays Code was essentially saying, all right, guys, we're back from war. Let's have a family. It's all about the family life. And so the Hays Code essentially said you cannot have anything that would demoralize your audience in the movie. So your endings could not have the villain win ever. You can't have your hero or your protagonist do anything immoral in order to get what they want. No gays, no interracial relationships. You can't have any people of color in any heroic stances. This is their excuse to put a lot of their racism and a lot of their homophobia and a lot of their misogyny.
And make boring stories.
And make very boring stories. And that's pretty much why you see a lot of, there's not a lot of horror stories to begin with.
Yeah.
And Alfred Hitchcock was pretty much one of the only people who took the Hays Code and was like, okay, I will dance around whatever kind of stuff you guys have. And... and make a good movie out of it.
Yeah.
And I guess not really a lot of... I mean, you get a lot of good movies in this era. Victoria will say. She's like, there's a bunch. And I've seen a good number, but...
I was going to say, there was the Alfred Hitchcock types of movies, and there also, like, of the other studios, they did, like, The Scientist, The Mad Scientist.
Right, yeah. That's what
came out of that.
Mm-hmm. And because of the Hays Code, because it's so, like, religious-centered, it's kind of, like, anti-science, anti-birth control.
They wanted you to put those things in the bed,
and this is why,
not believe in that shit,
right? Exactly, and this is why around this time you get a lot of movies that have to do with, the golden age of Hollywood. You're just like show tunes and dancing and comedy and romance and all that good stuff. But
it was light fun.
Light fun. Yeah, no scariness. But then you go into the 60s and that's when the Hays Code is released, kind of abolished, if you could say. And they're just like, heck yes. The 60s, you guys know what happened in the 60s. The Vietnam War, counterculture, hippies, sex, drugs, feminism, the civil rights. Ooh, there's so much happening. And then the movie industry was like, let's go off. And so that's when you get a lot of like really gory, movies in here, and a lot of kind of sexually explicit movies. I don't really know any movies specifically. There weren't any specific movies like in the 60s that kind of were blockbuster successes. These were just kind of people who were expressing their creative freedoms with this new, levity in the industry.
They just went ham. It's like when you let a kid, you give them all the freedom in the world. They're like...
And then like, sweet.
You know what happened when we all turned 18 or when we turned 21. We just went crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And so... Or it's like if you're a kid who grew up in a super strict family and then you go off to college by yourself, you're gonna party. So, stuff like that. And then it wasn't until the 70s where we really get into the good stuff. And that's considered the golden age of slasher films.
Yes.
And then also, in the early 80s... Oh, actually, I'll get into the 80s, my bad. Okay, so slasher films. Here is what Wikipedia had to say. What is considered a slasher film? It is a subgenre of horror films involving a killer murdering a group of people, usually by bladed tools. And you think of all your iconic slasher villains. You have... Where are they? You have Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger... Jason Voorhees, Leatherface, Ghostface, all that good stuff. Sometimes Chucky. and then everyone just like, this was like a new thing in the genre that people have not really seen yet. I mean, you kind of go into Psycho, with that kind of thing, but this is like to... Like, you take it even further.
I was going to say, because he only killed, three people.
Yeah, I think it was the girl in the shower, the detective.
Spoiler alert, but it's been out for years, so.
He only killed a few.
Yeah.
But this, only see, like, one of them on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, slasher movies,
this is like
purely all on screen.
Yeah, and then, and it's, like, pretty much, like, spree killing, essentially. Yeah. And then also in the 70s, around this time, giving you guys some context, historical context, you get your rise of serial killers, Ted Bundy, what's his name? Jeffrey Dahmer.
I was like, Ted Bundy's the only serial killer.
No, Jeffrey Dahmer and, all these other kinds of...
Ed Kemper.
Hmm. And, the Zodiac Killer. You have all these guys and you could go into, like, why all these serial killers just kind of popped up. But it's just a big, huge moment of...
Everybody was trusting.
Everyone is super trusting. And all of a sudden they realize, oh, maybe we shouldn't trust hot white men anymore.
Ew.
I know.
He wasn't hot, Ted Bundy.
He is not my type, but...
I don't... I never understood that either, but I guess she was just very charming.
But also,
I guess back in that time, that was what was attractive.
Okay, I guess.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm also, like, in there's Psycho.
Yeah.
Norman Bates is attractive.
Yeah, he's a cute that actor man. Is yeah.
Like, when there's that and there's. No. Yeah. No.
I trust Norman Bates.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and then a lot of these, and then a lot of the golden age of slasher films, these slasher films kind of solidified the tropes of, and the pretty much the frameworks of what we expect from a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
They exploited dangers looking in American institutions, such as high schools, colleges, summer camps, and hospitals. And so also around this time, kind of after the 50s, everyone was just like, teenagers are where we need to really market our films.
Yeah.
And so all these slasher films surround teenagers and college kids. And also in the 80s, Ronald Reagan becomes president. Fuck Reagan, first of all. And he, you know, kind of brought in this rejuvenation of, again, a moral compass
mm-hmm.
to them, a very conservative American society, and, you know, the war on drugs, and, you know, sexual promiscuity among teenagers, you know, things like that. And so a lot of these slasher films have created these tropes of, you know, the virgin, and, you know, usually these kids who would have sex or do drugs, they would end up dying.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, like, before Reagan became president, cause mm-hmm. I think I was 1980,
mm-hmm.
When they had all that freedom in the 70s, when you said we were talking about, like, the really famous slasher icons like Michael Myers or yeah. Leatherface or what have you. Even though it was supposed to be this, like, sexually liberating time, mm-hmm. right? And then they were like, oh, we can do all these things in movies. They still, like, kind of upheld that.
Almost like the Hayes standards.
Yeah, kind mm-hmm. of. Because even though they showed it, they were like, oh, but this is what happens
yeah.
when you do that. So yeah. it's like, even though they weren't, like, confined by that anymore, they mm-hmm. still, like, had it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and a lot of, I'll go into a couple directors specifically in a second, but a lot of directors have in this time have been criticized for following these moral compasses,
yeah,
you know, and saying like, oh, you're this is anti-feminist against these women, you know, or these kids who are being sexually liberated or having any sort of like independence or what have you, and they're just like, no, that's not it, that's not what we're doing. I mean, maybe they probably didn't intend to do that. Yeah. But it's just so embedded in that society at the time
yeah.
that it was just there.
Yeah. Which is so weird, too, that, like, slasher movies were what was the rage in the 70s
mm-hmm.
when, like, because you have, like, the Hitchcock movies of the 60s mm-hmm. and things like that. And then right in between this, like, at the end of the 60s and to the start of the 70s, you had The Exorcist and Rosemary's mm-hmm. Baby, which mm-hmm. were the demons.
Yeah.
And I don't get it, because I'm like, you had two very prominent demon movies
yeah.
come out
mm-hmm.
in between those two, and nothing else happened.
Yeah, pretty
they just
much.
Disappeared. And I'm like, why? Did they scare everybody so much that nothing else happened? That there was no other craze? Because if you do it now, mm-hmm. there's demon movies everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, essentially.
Because I'm like,
yeah.
what happened?
The Exorcist and Rosemary's Baby were iconic in their own right.
Yeah, because I was like, they scared the living shit out of people. People threw up coming out of those movies.
I still get scared watching yeah. The Exorcist. That's like, you can totally tell, like, this is fake.
Yeah.
It looks campy in a modern eye. However, I feel like that makes it even more terrifying.
Yeah.
It's called, there's this psychological thing called Uncanny Valley, which is where you look at, like, a cartoon of, like, this very cartoonized, like, say The Simpsons. They look nothing like humans, but you're comfortable with them looking like that because
yeah.
you're just like, oh, this is like totally fake.
Yeah.
And then on the opposite end is something like like Lion King or something, where it's like super hyper realistic that you're just like, oh, I believe that. You know, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I can't even tell that's a CGI human or whatever. Yeah. I mean, there's no humans in... But, you know, the technology. The Exorcist exists in this uncanny valley. Uncanny where it looks human, but it looks almost enough like us. But there's something off. And you can... It's very similar to when you look at, like, these androids or these sex dolls that are out now. And you're just like, they look real, but also I know they're fake. And they look just slightly wrong. And it makes you unsettled. That's why The Exorcist works so well.
I was going to say, maybe it's probably because everybody's had such a violent reaction or like volatile reaction to those movies when they came out. Maybe that's why.
But then also
nothing else happened with them.
Yeah. And then also like later on you hear about the history of filming that movie.
Oh yeah. That's insane.
That I think adds just another layer of creepiness, of unsettling vibes to The Exorcist specifically, because that movie's just surrounded by darkness.
That movie, I mean, I get scared by movies that have to deal with, like, religion. Like, for some reason, that is just, like, insanely terrifying to me. It's okay. So, like, I feel like if I watch that movie, like, I'm gonna be, like, on edge. Like, I mean, I love The Conjuring, like, one of my favorite horror movies, but it also deals with, like, Catholicism, whatever. And I don't know, there's just, like, another level of creepiness for some reason that comes with that. Not that I'm saying, like, religion is creepy or anything. I'm just saying that because it's supposed to be, you know, because it's, like, so holy.
It's and then something you're supposed to feel comfort and then there's this,
like, unholy thing. Just... so terrifying.
Yeah. And so that's pretty much, and then so the slasher films pretty much started with, it was jump-started by the massive success of John Carpenter's Halloween.
Oh, so good.
And thus we are introduced to the second Scream Queen, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Just like her mother.
I don't know if this was on purpose or maybe it could have been. But
sometimes kids follow into their parents' footsteps. Lon Chaney, his kid, literally did the same thing and went into the monster movie business too and started doing the same thing. So like a lot of their kids just happened to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So she could have just done it too. I'll be a scream queen like my mother.
Yeah. And she was essentially like the quintessential heroine of what you would see later on in a lot of slasher films where she is your iconic, your pristine, you know, American woman, American girl, essentially.
White girl,
yes.
Mostly.
White girl. You barely ever see, you know, women of color in any of these movies.
God, no, it's the 70s.
No. And then right after that, you get into a lot of Wes Craven movies. So Wes Craven kind of jumped on his back, not in a bad way, but like, you know, they kind of were going like, hey, this is actually like a really good formula. Mm-hmm. But Wes Craven did a really good job of kind of mixing it up what you would expect from a horror movie. So then you have, you know, The Hills Have Eyes, you have Nightmare on Elm Street, and then you got Scream. Nightmare on Elm Street was like a huge thing, and like similarly to like Friday the 13th, and where they include a lot of fantasy into it, and that gave it a little extra oomph into like almost like a psychological scare, as opposed to Scream, where it's just people, you know. And also Scream, because it came later in the 90s, you know, and I'm going to move on into the 90s. A lot of the 90s movies, you were already, the slasher film has already kind of beat itself to death.
Yeah.
You see a lot of remakes, you know, Scream 1, all of the...
There were so many Halloweens.
Yeah, so many Halloweens, so many Freddy Krueger movies, and, you know, it first made a lot of money because, again, these were cheap movies, and they were new, and a lot of people went to go see it, so they made a lot of money. Yeah. And so a lot of people were like, wow, people really like this, let's make 10 more. And
we never learn.
No, we never learn. And so, and then everyone got tired of it. Everyone was like, these are boring. I've seen this movie a million times.
Yeah.
You know, going back to, you know, back in the 80s, The Evil Dead, it kind of still had these tropes and it was campy.
Yeah.
Although
unintentional.
Yeah, it was accidentally
campy. Yeah, accidentally campy, but it was campy and it had, you know, your uncanny valley-ness of The Exorcist with all their zombies. It had the, you know, kids being kids, you know, kind of debauchery going on. And then the comeuppance at the end. But in the 90s, they saw all of these things being played over and over and over again, and then you kind of come into the parodies, the comedies. You see, and I think kind of Scream sort of is in this transitional period where they are extremely aware of the tropes that horror movies has come to be known for, and they kind of turn it on its head. They kind of embrace it, and they're just like, yeah, watch this, or actually, no, we're gonna combat that. And yeah,
I was just gonna say, they have that one character, forgot his name, but he like literally says in the movie, like, oh, don't you know, like, the Scary Movie rules, and then he just lists them off, like, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, and then at the end, he's like, I'm so glad I'm a virgin. And then I think he gets shot or something like that. It's really funny.
He lives.
He lives.
Because he's a virgin.
Yes. And then so they become the kind of like a self-mocking sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's when you kind of get your, I'm getting a little too ahead of myself. I'll get there in a second. But, you know, all the movies that kind of went away from, you know, your formulas, you get Sixth Sense, M. Night Shyamalan. You get Tremors, which I used to watch actually a lot as a kid, which is weird. But I loved that movie.
The one movie she watches, Jesus.
I know. I don't know why. The Craft. Oh, yeah. That movie still gives me like an unsettled feeling every time I watch it. Something about it. I don't know. The Candyman. And then, weirdly enough, I think this is because this is kind of the introduction to a lot of international videos and purchasing of videos from international things. Japanese and Korean horror become really popular in America around this time, because a little into the 80s, Japanese anime and everything like that got really popular because they were having a big VHS boom in America in the 80s and into the 90s. And so they're just like, let's bring in our films, like our live action films. And so you get things like The Ring and Japanese horror movies. That could be a whole other episode, but Japanese horror movies and a lot of Korean ones tend to be more psychological. And they tend to kind of really dig deep into things that you are scared of the most, or things that kind of pull you out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, I was scared for a full year of the television. I just happened to walk in on somebody watching The Ring as a child, and I was like, I can't look at the TV in my room.
To this day, I don't have a TV in my room. I can't do it.
Oh God, it was so terrifying. I was like, hell no.
Yeah. And the 90s also is kind of like the resurgence of supernatural horror.
Yeah.
So especially in South Korea, you get a lot of supernatural horror ones, especially with Whispering Corridors, made in 1998, which is what sparked their, like, kind of golden age of horror movies.
Yeah.
And then, so you got your usual supernatural stuff, and then what kind of leads into the next decade is the Blair Witch Project.
Oh, found footage.
Found footage. And again, you get this cheap budget, and then you make a lot of money. And also, Emily, talk about their marketing for that.
Bro, marketing sometimes, like we've said before, can make or break your movies. And Blair Witch Project, they marketed the shit out of this geniusly. They put missing posters, like missing people posters around, just to advertise the movie, but they made them look real, so people were like, what the fuck is going on? And then they didn't put the movie as like a trailer thing, they would just put like clips of like the found footage out. And then you're like, what's going on?
And also, this is around the time like the internet became
thing, so too. Then like people went to go see the movie not understanding like what this is. And then they all thought this was real. Like, they thought this was a genuine thing, not a movie. So that's why, like, everybody was, that's why, like, they think of, like, a lot of people are like, this is one of the scariest movies. It's not because of the actual movie, because if you watch the movie now knowing
what everything
about it, you're like, that movie's actually kind of boring.
Hot take.
I watched it once and I was like, oh my God, it's one of the scariest movies ever. And I was like, I'm so bored. But like, if you, as somebody who, like, if you were alive during that time period, just seeing all the stuff around, I'd be scared shitless. Cause I'm like, what is going on to these people?
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is real. Oh my God, this girl's gonna die. Oh my God, what? No. and it's a movie.
Though. Yeah, and then even before, during, and after the movie, they also had a website of active blog postings of what's going on. That's why this movie was so sensational.
Yeah.
Because it really...
They really capitalized on what they were doing. Mm-hmm. They knew what they were doing. Yes. They were like, we're going to make this seem as real as possible because that's going to make people come.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be like, it's like a, it's, it, they think it's a documentary, not a movie.
Yeah.
So they're like, fuck, we just watched this happen.
Yeah. Now what do I do? And you're like, what if this is real? And then that's like the unsettlingness about it.
No, it's just a movie.
Now it's just a movie. It's not as fun anymore. And then you go in the 2000s, I think, you know, that's
kind of... I'm not a fan.
No.
Of the 2000s horror movies.
Early 2000s horror movies aren't...
Can you remember what... Or,
it's like I will Saw, like Hostel.
Yeah. I mean, Saw was iconic because... Horror. Yeah, Saw was iconic because of, again, tiny budget.
Okay, I will say, though, Saw has a plot.
True.
To anybody who says that it does... Saw, the first one, and the second one have a plot.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like with a lot of horror movie, what is it called, franchises, like the first one, too, like in Saw and in Scream, like they have a really good plot, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then, it works so well. And then they're like, okay, we can build upon this. And then they like completely drop everything that made it good.
Yeah.
And they're like, here's more. And you're like, I don't want this.
Yeah.
Trash.
And I think what Saw kind of brought up was this new introduction to torture porn.
Yes.
And then that's when you get, you know, discussing things like Human Centipede and...
Yes, I didn't watch Saw until college, over 10 years past when the movie came out.
Yeah.
Because I'm very uncomfortable when it comes to body horror and things like that. Because, like, I don't want to watch somebody cut their arm off.
Yeah.
I really don't. But I watched it because somebody else was watching it. My roommate was watching it at the same time. And I was like, oh. And the plot... I thought the plot itself was interesting because I was like, oh, there's actually something going on. It's not just...
Murder. I mean,
torture.
It's not just torture.
Yeah.
But then the later ones are just torture. So if you are a person who likes body horror, fine. Go ahead and watch all of them.
The early 2000s is your thriving
era. Yeah, but if you are somebody who, like, can't stomach that, then you can just watch the first one because there's not too much in the first one. I don't remember there being too
not like
much.
Unnecessary. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess at the end you find out it's all unnecessary, but like,
again, these movies have been out for a while if you don't know about them.
Although they did make, because as everything happens, there are more remakes.
Oh, yeah, I was
Jigsaw,
wondering if you can
came out and they didn't again. Marketing, great thing. Jigsaw wasn't marketed as part of the Saw franchise, but it's connected.
Yeah.
And then it was really good.
Do you want to play a game?
And then I was like, you know what? Genuinely, good job.
Yeah.
Good job. Not a bad movie.
Yeah. And then one time I was actually very curious about the Human Centipede.
Mm-mm.
I've never seen it, but I always remembered like in, like, what was early 2000s, like elementary school, middle school.
I think it came out 2010.
Oh, no? 2009. It says 2009 in my little notes here.
So. we were in middle school, high
school. Middle
school,
high school, yeah. And
I was going to say elementary school.
So I was like, no.
I don't remember anything. It's all a blur. But, you know, in high school, middle school, everyone was like, oh my gosh, did you see Human Centipede? Oh, and like, I remember it being a big thing, and I never watched it because I just don't like horror movies. Since day one, I was like, no. But as an adult now, make fun of me. As an adult now, without watching the movie, I was like, I'll go on Wikipedia and just read the synopsis. The first movie, I think they did it just to be a, you know, body horror fest.
Mm-hmm.
And then because it made such a splash amongst people and such a visceral reaction, they made 2 and 3. I would argue that 2 and 3 were made to parodize themselves, like parody themselves.
Yeah.
Sorry, parody themselves, but and also make a commentary on torture porn in its as itself.
Yeah.
Especially in the third one, they kind of just like, I think it's more introspective while still playing into the tropes that they already kind of created.
Final Destination is that 2000s?
Final Destination is 2000.
It's 2000,
okay. Yeah.
So does it follow body horror or no?
I feel like that one doesn't really, I mean, if you get into the later ones,
yeah,
then that one I feel like is more body horror, but I feel like it's like a half and half, like kind of psychological, because like when you're watching it, you're like, like, this would never happen, but it could this happen. Could happen yeah. in yeah. this exact, like, series of.
Yeah.
But I love that movie. I love Final Destination. The first Final Destination. Put that out there.
Yeah.
And then, my opinion yeah. on Final Destination. You only need to watch the first one and the fifth one, and you're good.
Yeah. And then, so, amongst all these other ones, there's a few ones that kind of pop up in the middle. It's kind of like a clusterfuck of different kinds of fantasy and psychological horror movies.
I was going to say, there wasn't no big, like...
Trend.
Trend, yeah. yeah. There wasn't, like, a slasher this, like...
In, was... in the late... I want to say when we were maybe, like, 6th, 7th grade, so 2006, 7, 8, 9-ish, they tried to revive all of the classic ones. Yes. Like, they did another Friday the 13th. No, what's it called?
Oh my god, they did the Verses. I do remember.
Oh yeah, Freddy versus Jason.
That's it, yeah. And I think they did like a whole other...
I distinctly remember the trailer having the Freddy on the chalkboard doing the...
Yeah, yeah.
Because everybody hated it, because they also used that, I'm pretty sure, as part of the... Did they ever have a house at Halloween Horror Nights? Possibly. But I, like, distinctly remember that trailer.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
did those ones. And, like, yeah. My Bloody Valentine. Like, I remember that.
Yeah, these are, like,
your Nightmare on Elm Street. Mm-hmm. They had it, but, like, with new, like, even more scantily clad, like, the hot women of the 2000s.
Yeah.
Like, anyway.
Yes.
No, yeah, exactly, yeah.
God damn it, the guy from Supernatural. Jared Padalecki.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
But was that,
when, like... Paris Hilton's in The House of Wax.
Yeah.
Yep. But I don't think those ever went anywhere.
No. Because
I think they did just the first one. Like,
they just, like, redid a couple.
And then they were like...
They didn't make them as much money as I think they thought they would.
There's a lot of one-offs in this, but there have been a few cult classics, like American Psycho with Christian Bale, which I actually loved when I first saw it. I mean, that is a gore fest. And I couldn't watch a few of it, but at the end, I actually loved it. Just because I thought it was very interesting, the psychology of it.
Also, Christian Bale trying to get that role. That man's fucking psycho.
He does a lot of stuff to himself to get roles, right? Like,
He also bullied other people not to get the role.
Yeah, so,
he was like, don't fucking take it.
I don't know. I think he was actually a pretty good person.
I know. But they wanted to give it... I can't remember who it was, but somebody else was offered the role, and he was basically like, don't fucking take it. It's mine. And then they're like, all right, bitch.
All right. The iconic business card scene is a treasure for graphic design majors everywhere. I remember me and my friends would just, like, giggle over it because we're just like, I understand exactly where he's coming from. And then you have Trick or Treat. I love Trick or Treat. I actually think Sam is extremely cute. I wouldn't mind getting a little toy of him. I think he's adorable. It's just little face.
He's literally on my water bottle.
He's so cute.
Lollipop.
That one was fun. I think that one was fun, where it's like, it doesn't really take itself too seriously. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like, you know, horror fun, Halloween fun.
That one made for a really good Halloween Horror Nights house. Did you go?
Yes.
That one was scary.
You have The Strangers, which is probably more of like a commentary on the society at large. You're just like, I don't trust nobody.
No bitch.
I know the girls in this room will love this Jennifer's Body.
So good.
That one is another example of bad marketing.
I was about to say
they fucked that one up.
Yeah, sure. Where they marketed it as pretty much, look at Megan Fox, look how hot she is. Yeah. She's using her feminine wiles to murder boys.
That's probably why, like, it did so badly. Like, a bunch of men were like, oh, Jennifer, no, sorry. What's her name? Megan Fox. They're like, oh, she's so hot. And then they go into the movie and it's basically like, you know, she kills a bunch of men. She's like, men are evil.
Yeah. Like, it's essentially, I would argue, a feminist movie where she's just like, she's like, fuck these boys who are not worth anyone's time. Yeah. And it's actually like kind of like an anti-men sort of movie.
And good for her.
I love the line though. Did you guys have sex in here?
It smells like Thai food.
The moment you said Jennifer's Body, that's like, I almost blurted it out and I was like, wait, no.
I think it was also directed by a woman. Is that correct?
Diablo Cody, I think.
Yeah.
It's the same lady that made Juno.
Yes. Yeah, ah, so what a, again, yeah. That one was like an icon of its time. It's another cult favorite. Oh, speaking of cult favorites, I totally forgot to jump back to, I think it was the 70s with Rocky Horror Picture Show. Mm. It is not really a horror movie, but yeah, it is considered sci-fi horror in a way, but it's like sci-fi campiness.
It's definitely not a Halloween movie.
It is definitely a Halloween movie. And if you guys ever want to listen to like some, you know, background historical info on that, Page Seven has a pop history episode on it. And I thought it was really interesting because I think the cultural significance of Rocky Horror Picture Show as like a very counterculture, weird, artsy, gay movie just kind of, you know, meant a lot. And I think Jennifer's Body was probably kind of like that in the early 2000s in regards to horror movies.
Yeah. Were we in the 2010s?
We are in the 2010s now. All right. And also in the early 2000s, you get your introduction to, like, horror movies based on video games, i.e. Silent Hill, Doom, Resident Evil.
I love Silent Hill. I think it's a fun time.
I like watching people play it. I think that's kind of fun. I don't know why I like horror video games.
That makes me so anxious.
The game Until Dawn. I still can't even finish it because I get so anxious about it. And also, I'm not a gamer, so I don't remember how the controller works. So
it's
I'm
weird, like, right? Because you have to like stay holding like in a certain position sometimes.
Yeah, but then also at the same time, it's like you have to do it quickly, and I can't remember what the button twitch, yeah, and I'm like, fuck. Yeah.
So, hard yes. Agree. So, you know, that is the early 2000s. Kind of like, no one really knows where they're going with horror. It's just
kind of making movies.
Everyone does whatever they want. 2010s. This is where we are now, and I think it's kind of getting more cohesive in a way. You don't have your sparse pop-ups of weird movies. Mm-hmm. You kind of get universes, i.e. the Conjuring universe. I've seen...
This is when Universal made its comeback. They said, we're putting money back in horror.
Yep.
Doing it.
Yep, The Conjuring. I have seen the first one. Is that only the first one? And that's, I think it was good.
I love The Conjuring.
And then you have Annabelle, La Llorona,
The Nun.
The Nun.
Terrible.
You got the Vitch.
I feel like A24 horror movies are like their own
their own breed.
Witch, we'll right? talk about it now. The Vitch, Hereditary. And then we have Ari Aster movies.
Yep.
Like Midsommar. Hereditary and Midsommar. Midsommar. What do you see a lot of, especially modern movies that are made within the last 5 years, are very more psychological.
Yeah.
Yes, aesthetically pleasing, very psychological, and then kind of politically charged.
Yes.
Pretty much, I mean, you could argue that a lot of horror movies are commentaries on
society. Yeah.
But I feel like modern horror is more on the nose.
I was going to say, they're very obvious about what they're talking about rather than what they were in the past.
Yeah.
Like,
Cabin in the Woods is a prime example to criticize, you know, old expectations of horror.
Yeah.
But then commenting on why do we have these expectations on the whore, the jock, you know, and the virgin and all the, and the goofy guy, and the token black person, you know, like, it, all these things. I think you see a lot of this stuff in a lot of 2010s horror movies that are just, like, kind of pointing the finger at a lot of tropes that were given to the horror genre. Like, Unfriended, Friend Request, Truth or Dare. These were, like,
Blumhouse, right?
Blumhouse.
Jason Blum, bro. He really came in and said, fuck it, I'm gonna give you this little bit of money and go make a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But they do it well.
Yep.
Not like other movies that are...
Yeah. I love Split.
Yeah, because Ouija is also theirs too, I'm pretty
Ouija,
sure.
Ouija Origin of Evil?
Ouija, yes. No, I can't
so
do
good.
That.
Origin of Evil is so good.
Is it? Well, I mean, again, I will only watch horror movies with you, Victoria, but...
That tells you how much of a wimp she is.
I am a wimp, yes.
She will only have her girlfriend to cuddle her, because if she's with me, she'll literally just look at her phone the whole time.
I can't watch it. And then I really liked Split.
It's a different type of
horror. It is a different type of horror, and I was actually shooketh when I found out that it was a sequel.
Also, I might say, we've discussed this before with Toni Collette and Hereditary. James McAvoy did deserve an Oscar nomination for Split because the amount of acting that man had to do.
That is what,
I was going to say, we didn't talk about Silence of the Lambs, which I don't know, do we consider that a horror movie or not?
I think that's arguable. I think according to a lot of film buffs, especially in when it regards to the Oscars, it was considered a horror movie.
Okay, look.
I consider it a thriller. I'm just going to put that out there.
I was going to say, it is a thriller.
I do consider
it a thriller through and through. It is not a horror movie. Mm-hmm. It's a suspense movie.
Yeah.
There's
not really a lot.
Because I'm going to say, what are you going to say? That Criminal Minds is a fucking horror show?
No. Yeah.
But Criminal Minds and Silence of the Lambs are like almost the same thing. Because it is a cop and a serial
It's a
killer.
Crime. It's almost like a true crime.
What are you going to tell me? That Mindhunter is a horror movie? No. No.
We will talk about that later.
We can do a whole thing on, but that's different.
Okay.
But, like, Silence of the Lambs is a thriller.
Yes.
Which is why, and I will fully stand by this, the Oscars gave them all of the nominations and all of the awards because it is a thriller.
It's, yeah.
Not a horror movie.
Yeah, I think it was just
because Jordan Peele winning that is a
that is a horror
is
movie.
A psychological horror.
Yes,
that is a true horror. Well, that one's a thriller. It's a psychological thriller.
Mm-hmm.
Different things.
Different
genre.
I mean, Jordan Peele. Since we're on that topic now, yeah. I think both of his movies should have gotten way more Oscars than they got. They deserved way more Oscars because I mean, Get Out was fantastic. He won an Oscar for best screenplay. Is that what
I guess? Yes, best original screenplay.
Yeah. Best original screenplay, which was well deserved. But I think they were kind of pulled. The Oscars had to be pulled by their leg to give them that because they're just like, oh, we have to give it to a black man.
And a black man who wrote horror.
Exactly. A black man who wrote horror. And he's a comedian too. They're like, oh no. But there was so much conversation around Get Out as one of the you can talk about blaxploitation horror films back in the 70s, but essentially it was the first mainstream horror movie calling out the black experience and the horrors of black American lives in a horror movie. And it was so good.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so on the nose. And you're just like, oh, I get it. But also it's extremely disturbing because the acting in that movie was divine.
Oh my God, yeah.
By a lot of unknown actors too, right? Like the girl who played, what's her name? The maid? I don't know her name.
I think her name is Georgina.
Georgina. The character, her name is Georgina. I don't know who that actress is, but she needs to be in more stuff because she was fantastic. And same thing with the guy who played, you know, the...
Chris,
yeah. He, I think...
Wait, like, the... Chris is the main guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, no, wait.
Are you talking about the main guy?
No, I'm talking about the side character, the other...
Oh.
No, they have... No, they have the other guy.
The guy who gets...
The guy who runs.
Oh.
I'm thinking of the running guy. Like, these...
I don't know his name.
I don't know his name either.
The gardener,
yeah. Like, these are the side characters, and even the other guy who was in the house party later, all these side characters are great actors.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's so much care and love put into this movie, and you could see it on all sides.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of cool when you see Jordan Peele coming from a comedian standpoint. The movie is also kind of funny, you know? It has its moments of levity. You can see that, but also I think it kind of introduced Jordan Peele as a very intelligent writer and creator.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel like with horror and with comedy, it gets like a bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even especially like in the Oscars, but like to be a comedian, you have to be like extremely smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, even like, even though this is not, we're talking about horror movies, but like with comedy, like It's Always Sunny, Charlie Day has said it. He was like, you have to be really, really smart to write characters this stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to, because you have to balance them, because like,
yeah,
there's a level of care, like you were saying, with these sorts of things. Like, that's why if you trash horror movies or anything like that, because you're like, oh, they don't put a lot of care into these things, they really do, especially like good horror movies that have a plot, that have things that are going for it. There's a lot of care that are put into these things that like make the story go along. Like, Final Destination has a whole plot going for it. There's there's a whole thing threading them through, which is why I really like the first one and the fifth one, because it threads the whole thing and pulls it full circle. And I was like, holy shit. I literally sat there and said, holy shit. And it's beautiful.
Who would have thunk?
Yeah, I said, you waited how many years to do that?
Yeah, and then, you know, and then you go into his second, you know, movie, you get Us, which is, it wasn't as popular as Get Out, because I think, I would argue, his message was not as easy to read.
Yeah.
In this one, but I would consider this one to be so much scarier.
I think it is scarier as well.
Oh my gosh. I will put all of that to the people who play the doppelgangers.
Well, it's all them.
I mean, no. Oh, wait. I was like, wait. No, but like, there, look, see, my brain did that. For the two different people. But, you know, the actors are so good. The one who plays the little girl, what's the girl's name? Do you remember her name? What's her name?
Girl, I haven't seen that movie.
I just remember Pluto.
Zora
or something like that. People yelling at home, it's this. And then Pluto, and then Abraham, and Red. Mm. Lupita Nyong'o, I am so viscerally upset she did not get an Oscar.
Oh my God, yeah. That's racism.
That is racism to a T. And like, she... Oh my gosh. Tell me, I want you all to watch that movie and just look at Lupita Nyong'o just throughout the entire movie and tell me she is not the greatest actress on the planet. Like, oh my gosh, just...
And you can't even say she doesn't look great on the screen, because she does.
Oh, my God, it's so good. And
every time she's at an award show, too, she looks she's the best dressed every single time.
Yeah, my uncle met her. He said she was, like, hands down the most beautiful woman he's ever seen. I was like, damn, I'm so jealous.
And I feel like that movie, I think, solidified and also just kind of proved again that Jordan Peele is just extremely smart when it comes to interweaving a story with a message. That, I don't know if you at home don't know this, that movie is a criticism of classism and class structures in America. And I think, you know, you could argue that Ari Aster is also a similar creator,
yeah,
and his intelligence for creating really smart movies like Hereditary. We've talked about this again. I feel like in Hereditary, what's her name? What's that actress?
Toni Collette.
Excuse me.
How dare you?
I know. She's an icon.
I can memorize any song that I hear or any like sort of dialogue that I've ever heard, but if you tell me what an actor's name is, I will forget it immediately.
I told you I can name any actors from now. I can't do the ones in the past.
No, I can't do that. Anyways, Toni Collette, her acting was superb. So good. Victoria.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, you can't watch that movie and not notice. I mean, everybody in that movie is great, obviously. Yes. Like, there's so many great, like, Alex. Is it Alex?
No, it's Nat.
Dang it. Nat Wolff. I mean,
Nat Wolff.
Wait, no, it is Alex.
Alex Wolff.
In my mind, I was like, wait, no.
Just
you said,
all the
you said it with such confidence, and then I was like, no, that's wrong. I was like,
right. Yeah, I mean, Alex Wolff, like, he puts in, like, fantastic performance. But Toni Collette, like, you come away from that movie, and, like, that's what you remember the most, is, like, Toni Collette's acting, and it's like so fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, it is so good. And honestly, like, it was so disrespectful of it is of the Academy to like watch that and then kind of disregard it because it's a horror movie. Mm-hmm.
And
because
it's a true horror movie.
Yeah. And because, like, you know, I feel like this is just getting into some politics regarding the Academy, but nominate.
Yes.
Obviously, like, it push it, like, those movies get more money because people go to see them, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, horror movies is a very specific genre that I feel like, even though it's popular, it's not super popular amongst the masses.
Really cash cows.
Yeah. So, like, I feel like, you know, that probably played into it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that's criminal. Yeah. I'm like, to this day, I'm upset. Like, she is so, so good. Mm-hmm. So fantastic. Toni Collette, if you're out there, I love you. Love this performance. You deserved it all.
Mm-hmm. Which is crazy to me that, like, they wouldn't. It has to be because, like, Hereditary had so much, like, praise to it.
Yeah.
Because, like, Get Out. Daniel Kaluuya?
I think that's it.
He got nominated.
He did, yeah.
Yes, I understand. His horror was a little bit different than Toni Collette's because he has to really portray, like, again, talked about this in our race episode, but, like, Black suffering.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He had to portray that in a horror aspect, mm-hmm. but he is portraying Black suffering.
And the Oscars love Black suffering.
And they love that. So it is a little different, just like hers is just pure. It's the range you have to go through in a horror movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like acting wise mm-hmm. is just insane. And then like even say what you want about like Florence Pugh.
Yeah.
She's great.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't get nominated for Midsommar. Yeah.
No, she
nominated
didn't.
For Little Women the same year they both
yeah.
came out. Okay, hold up. Her performance is better in Midsommar.
True,
I will
sure.
say.
Yeah. For sure.
That oh, that's so good.
But they gave her that Oscar nomination just because of Midsommar. I
yeah.
fully say they gave her that nomination for mm-hmm. Midsommar rather than Little Women. But they said it was for Little Women mm. because Little Women is the Oscar-baity movie
mm-hmm.
rather than the other one. Because no one else besides, I don't even think Saoirse got nominated for
no.
Little Women.
No, I don't think so.
Which is also
so.
Bad because Saoirse's great.
I don't think Saoirse,
so.
No one in Little Women got nominated.
Wait, yeah, she did. I think she did. Saoirse?
Did she get nominated?
I feel like she did.
Oh, I was thinking of...
I want to say, I think it was because specifically I remember them playing that one scene. I think we all know what scene I'm talking
oh,
about where
yeah.
she talks
oh, she
about
did,
being
she did.
Lonely.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Because, you know, they always have that one Oscar
yeah, of course.
Clip.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, she was nominated, but still.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, don't
You're
get
like,
me
yeah.
wrong. Her portrayal of Amy, yes. Is that...
Florence?
Oh,
yeah, Amy.
Yeah, is fine in Little Women. It was nice, and I did cry. But, like, her performance in Midsommar is better. But still. But it's a horror movie, so.
About Midsommar, I do have a question. I mean, yes, it is a horror movie, but I feel like it doesn't, in my personal opinion,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't fit directly into the horror genre. Because I feel like it's... I feel like that's the most closely associated with within the genres we have now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's... the most logical place to put Midsommar, but I feel like it's, if you watch it, like, it's not scary. Do you
it's
know what
disturbing.
It
is?
Except for the one scene.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, like, for the most part, there's, like, nothing, it's more of, like, I wouldn't even know how to describe it.
It's
like
just,
a psychological
it's like
something.
A, is it a thrill? It's not even a thriller.
No.
There's nothing really exciting that happens. It's more just, like, you're unsettled.
I would, like, kind of lump it in with, Not A Beautiful Mind. I don't know why that always comes to mind. The other one where they do a bunch of drugs. Does anybody know?
Oh.
Requiem for a Dream?
Yeah, okay.
Where you see, like, that's
okay.
a horror movie, but it's not a horror movie.
Yes.
Like, it within that, like...
Yeah. I understand what
yeah.
you mean. Yeah.
So,
okay, yeah. No,
that's
I
what
get
I,
that.
Yeah.
I get that.
Because, like,
just,
I watched
because
it.
Because it doesn't
yeah.
fit... It doesn't fit that umbrella, but they're just, like, it makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So we'll put it there.
What,
for sure.
What was that... Who's that director who had that nice quote? In the video we watched. Was
oh, that
what?
Horror is not a genre. It's a
that
emotion.
Is,
it's John Carpenter.
John Carpenter.
John
yeah.
Carpenter, yeah. He said horror is not a genre. It
is
a
feeling?
A reaction.
It is a reaction.
Yeah.
It's a reaction.
Which is true.
I mean, if you go by that definition, you could argue maybe...
you
maybe.
Are horrified when you see some things in Midsommar, for sure.
You're horrified in a lot of things. I'm horrified when I watch Pride and Prejudice.
But I mean, we've kind of caught up to modern day things. I think the latest horror movie that came out was Antebellum. I have not seen it. We have
Neither.
Not seen it. I think it's jumping on the back of Jordan Peele's movies. Mm-hmm. He was one of the producers, right? Is that correct?
I think for Candyman.
Oh, Candyman. That hasn't.
Or am I like
yet,
completely
though.
Wrong?
He is a producer on Candyman. Yes, but I think he's also a producer. No.
Maybe they
JJ
have
JJ Abrams.
Maybe they have like the
might
same
be the producer on
company.
Antebellum.
Like
he usually works with Blumhouse.
Either way,
he did Get Out with Blumhouse. Right?
Yeah, I was like, he usually
is
works
it Blumhouse
with Blumhouse.
Or Blumhouse?
Blum. I've heard Blum.
Wait. Blum or Blum. It's his last name. So how Jason, however the hell you pronounce your last name.
Yeah,
Blum or Blum.
Yeah,
I've pronounced it both on the show, so we've covered both bases.
Yes, but I mean. The reviews from that movie was not that great. I heard it was kind of not well done, not well executed. But the marketing for that was really good. That
it
looks
was
like
really
a,
good.
I would just based on that, me not being a horror fan was like, oh, I'm interested. I want to know because it's another one of those commentaries on how, on the black experience in America.
Do you think that's where horror's going? It's just going to be commentary on how people are experiencing
it could be.
Their life.
I mean, I was going to say like as recently it's gone to like a horror has become a genre for like women.
Yeah.
Yes.
And for people of color.
Mm-hmm. It's gone for, yeah, because like even if we go back just a little bit more, like The Babadook is about
mm-hmm. yeah.
grief.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hereditary is 100% about grief.
Motherhood and...
motherhood.
Yeah. Midsummer's about grief.
Yeah.
And like, womanhood and relationships.
Like, it's a lot of, like, processing feelings
yeah.
in an allegory using horror.
Yes.
Even...
And I feel like that's a really good
that's
genre
a good
to use. Like, fantastic.
Even,
yeah.
like, A Quiet Place is
yeah.
about family
mm-hmm.
and...
Oh, yeah. Do we consider that one horror? Because I think it was marketed as a horror movie.
It, I would say yes, because it has a it
it's
takes a lot of boxes
thing.
Because
okay.
it's a monster movie. It is a monster,
and it's also a survival movie.
Yes,
because yeah,
it's very like it's
like a dystopia.
It's a apocalyptic
okay.
monster movie.
Okay,
so it fits that like that realm,
yeah.
which is another like where they're also going is
mm-hmm.
going towards like the what we're going to look like when. Because that's like Bird Box
Yikes.
Did the same
yeah.
sort of like this is how the world
I'm
the aliens are.
Yeah,
so
I'm sure we'll get like more of those in the future. Because
yeah.
as you know, like horror just takes from what's happening
mm-hmm.
around
yeah.
us, and I mean, obviously, we're going through
there,
a hard time.
There was, I think it's called Host that just came out. Was it Host? I think it's called Host. There's this new movie that came out, and it was made during quarantine, and so it was about all these friends doing a Zoom meeting with each
oh,
other.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know
and
you're talking about.
So,
yeah.
like, I, again, it's one of those things where, because right now 2020 is a shit show, I think this is, like, a really good time where people are going to make a lot of horror movies in regards to probably going to get, you know, disease movies, pandemic movies.
I don't know if we'll get pandemic movies because it's a little too real, and some people don't like movies that they're currently
mm.
living
mm.
because war movies never profited when there was a current
oh.
war.
Except World War II.
Except for World War II.
Sorry, I just
yeah.
know that.
No, yeah.
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 But that's usually like they won't, you won't watch what you're currently living
mm.
in, but you'll watch things that are somewhat like you want to see what you want.
Yeah.
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 So in the horror genre, I think it's more of like
yeah.
a little bit.
It's going to be more
different.
Of a commentary on.
Yeah.
I personally think, what if
it might just be like Stir Crazy, Cabin Fever.
Maybe.
Thing that
yeah.
get.
That thing. Or like, I think it would be really cool if maybe we have more stories that come out for like maybe indigenous peoples.
Yeah.
Like we get indigenous. Like this is very. A long shot because you do not have like almost any indigenous peoples
mm-hmm.
who have any voice in the industry, but I think it would be really cool if there were some indigenous peoples out there to create movies that maybe, you know, maybe you can do a horror movie based on, you know, very similar to right now, Jordan Peele's direction, where you kind of make commentaries on racial injustices and just society at large. Or, and then I think, you know, Japan and Korea are kind of doing that right now with, I wouldn't consider Parasite a horror movie, but that's definitely a thriller,
yeah.
you know. Or Train to Busan. That one commented a lot, I feel like, on family values
yep.
In that society.
Yeah.
And, you know, also very similarly to pandemic hysteria.
Yeah.
You know? So
100%. It'll be interesting. It'll be in a couple of years. I
yeah.
think we'll get like what we're currently living in a couple of years. Because
yeah.
what's supposed to happen in the next year was supposed to be all the remakes. We're supposed
mm-hmm.
to get like the new Candyman. We're supposed to get
That's right.
Another Halloween,
yes.
another Saw,
another Scream. Yeah,
getting a lot of new of the old movies. So we'll see the Halloween that came out last year,
2 years ago,
or
yeah.
2 years ago. I can't remember. Time is not real. did have good reviews. Yes.
I think it had good. I liked it personally.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't.
I didn't go see it. Halloween is not. I've never gotten really into Halloween. The only one I've seen a couple. The one I can distinctly remember is the one Paul Rudd, just because I love Paul Rudd, and it's not a good one.
It must be the new okay Halloween H2O. it's literally what it's
yeah,
called. It's called
so
H2O because it's like the 20th anniversary of Halloween.
Okay.
I personally like it because I think Jamie Lee Curtis is like very good at what she does.
Yeah.
And then I feel like the reason that the new Halloween did well is because it was all women. It was like her, Jamie Lee Curtis, her daughter, which was Judy Greer, and then her daughter. And they all like, you know, defeated this man. by themselves. So people were like, oh, it's like a feminist movie. Which,
yeah,
great.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it. Again, that's just me.
Let me kick an ass, man. That's the best way.
Yeah. I think right now we've moved, horror has moved away from the campiness, the fun part. Me personally, I expect horror to still be commentary.
Yeah.
To still be kind of more serious. I feel like maybe after we're done with all of this bullshit, we'll get back to the fun parts.
There's got to be some director out there that still likes the Cabin in the Woods sort of thing. There's got to be a Josh Whedon out there. Even though that was not supposed to come out in 2010, that was supposed to come out years before.
Really?
Yeah, that movie got shelved, which is why it came out the same year as Avengers.
2012?
Yeah, 2012 is which is why it came out that year.
Interesting.
It got shelved. That's why, like...
Were they, like, sending it out with Chris Hemsworth?
No, I don't know why they did it like that, but I was like,
okay, they had a great movie on their hands, though.
They did, but I think they just probably thought it wasn't that great when they...
They don't like fun.
I had my mom buy me a movie ticket because I wasn't old enough. They were like, your parent has to come with you.
Yeah,
really. So my mom had to buy herself a ticket to come in, and then she turned around immediately and left. But yeah, I went and saw Cabin in the Woods.
My grandmother did that with me.
R-rated, I think that was my first R-rated movie without my mom. There.
I saw Black Swan for my first
one. Oh, we didn't even talk about Black Swan. That's another
thriller. That was in 2010.
That's a psychological thriller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think that one's considered horror, like, by masses.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I wouldn't consider that a horror. She does go a little crazy,
but
different. It's pretty much the history of horror.
We've caught up
all the way to now. Horror has gone through plenty of revivals and things like that.
I feel like it definitely cycles.
They'll go through the things again.
Yeah, like you did the, like when you started off, it was monsters, and then it moved into, like when I was talking about Alfred Hitchcock, it was more psychological, kind of.
Yeah.
And then it moved into gory, and then it just kind of like mixes, and then, you know.
I feel like the supernatural ones will always be here, just peeking up.
Yep.
With everyone, because I feel like everyone just does not like the unknown.
We didn't talk about Paranormal Activity. I've never seen it, though.
Well, Paranormal Activity is another one of those found footage things.
They were very prevalent for a little while, though.
Mm-hmm. That was, like super popular. Like, 2008.
Late 20s.
I did not put 2000s that in my notes, I'm to sorry.
2010s. I think so.
I think is when it was. I can't remember. I remember watching. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was 3. And it made me very, very nauseous because the cameras were very, very, very shaky in that one. I was like, I'm going to throw up as I lay down in the theater because there was no one watching it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to throw up. It was too much. I think that's when they stopped doing it, too, because they started realizing that, like, it was...
Like, no one...
Too much.
And also, I don't think anyone finds it very believable anymore.
The first one, I feel like people thought was, like, truly terrifying.
No, yeah. Like, a lot of... I think that's just because that one didn't have a lot of music. Didn't have your conventional, like, modes of transportation when it comes to, like, moving into the next scene.
Mm.
Or, like, moving into the next scare. The only music you ever heard was kind of this, like, vibration.
Well, it's because, like, the way Paranormal Activity worked was mainly, like, when you're watching, kind of like TLC shows that are, like, nanny cam shows and things like that.
Yeah,
they worked like that, or, like, Keeping Up with the Kardashians. It's like a reality show is the way they made those show that movie. So it works that way. So there's just that. But I think it's 3 that had handheld camera. And I was like, I need you to stop moving. Please.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Found footage, I think when utilized well, works so well. Because like the movie Sinister, that's a great horror movie. I think. Have you seen it?
No, but I'm scared. I went through the house.
Sinister scary shit.
And that one was scary. So I'm like, good.
Thing, though. Another thing with horror movies, if you have like a villain, like a scary character, like with Jaws, not seeing the scary guy really helps build the anxiety.
True.
So like with Sinister, you don't see him, I think, until like more than halfway through the movie.
I love that.
So, like, you only see, like, the shadow, and you're like, there's something there. And then, like, he keeps on watching the found footage and stuff like that. And I'm like, bro,
And it's really good. Like, that's, I think that was a great way of using it, because it's not, we're not discovering the found footage. He's discovering the found footage, and we're just watching.
Okay, so like changing the narrative a little
Yeah,
bit.
So it's changing the narrative, so I'm not getting nauseous.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's plenty of, like, there's plenty of niches out there that don't follow the trend, because there's not, they don't have to follow a certain timeline.
Yeah.
And then there's always going to be revivals, because they made the Mummy movies again in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. But those were...
Those are divine, fantastic. Like we said. And then they remade The Invisible Man, which is great.
Yeah.
Because they changed it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. There will always be, like...
Yeah.
They will take your... Because right now, that's what they're doing. They're taking the classic horror Universal monsters and reshaping them up
a little bit.
They're like, how we spice this shit up?
Yeah.
I will be surprised if we don't see Frankenstein, but that one's... Frankenstein is... We'll talk about that when we get to the future one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then so...
That's the history.
That's pretty much the history of movies and what we think are going to happen. Our next episode, we're going to talk about television. And that one is also a really interesting history, especially going into, again, the Hays Code. We're going to talk about that. And then, you know, kind of now on how... I think I want to kind of talk also about... true crime, the rise of true crime documentaries and podcasts and TV shows. So, yeah, because I would consider that kind of horror. Weirdly enough, I prefer true crime to horror movies.
Even though that's fucking real.
That's true right there.
That could actually happen to you,
know,
Eva.
Maybe I think I can fight it.
No.
My little body, I can fight
God,
it.
Oh my God, I hate her.
Anywho, we're going to be signing off now.
First we want to give a little shout out.
Oh yes,
to,
yes.
Because it's spooky season, and we want you guys to shop at small businesses.
Yes.
So we're giving a shout out to the Glass Auditorium, not like AUD, like odd, like
odd, like OD.
OD. Okay. Oh, auditorium. Cute.
The Glass Auditorium. They're everyday accessories for the everyday ghoul.
Cute.
Roll your weed on a coffin, rolling tray.
Oh.
Or they also make super cute accessories. Like, I have skeleton hand earrings and bat earrings.
So
if you're a very spooky person, I totally suggest going to their Etsy shop. We will put their link in our show notes, so you can see that. We'll also tweet it out and attach it to our
Instagram. Definitely go support your local businesses.
Yeah, she has tons of cute stuff. She also makes custom things. So if you right now she has a lot of Haunted Mansion things, so if you're very into Disney, also spooky things, she's got tons of shit. So
sweet,
go support small businesses.
Nice.
If you have the means.
Yes. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Right on. So, again, our intro is Upstairs with Kat by Diamond Ortiz, and our outro is Frenchman Street by Otis McDonald. My name is Eva. You can find me at BevaMart on Instagram or Eva_BevaMart on Twitter. And our, for both Instagram and Twitter, for our collective, you know, social media handles is Pop and Stance. Victoria, do you want to plug anything?
I don't. I have no hot takes, but thank you for letting me be here.
No worries. Emily?
You can find me on Instagram and on Twitter on the Emily Guerin. Thank you guys for listening. As always, stay safe, wear a mask, please vote.
Yes,
please send
it's voting
your ballots
time now.
If you are mailing in your votes as soon as you get them, please sign them. Do everything accordingly. Follow the directions.
And I've also seen that right now a lot of people are having a lot of trouble if you're going to like a physical polling area. Make a whole day out of it. Don't schedule anything for that day. Make an entire voting day, because I have seen some people specifically in Georgia who are waiting in line for around 7 hours. So bring a book, bring a phone charger, be prepared to stay there for a little while.
Also check the weather,
yeah, and also respect those around you. Do not harass anybody there. That is illegal. That's called voter harassment. Or voter intimidation, excuse me. And, you know, just respect everybody there. Keep your distance. You know, be nice to your polling volunteers. They're there because they want to and they want to help you out. And yeah, that's it.
Be safe.
Have a spooky October. We'll be back next week.
Bye.